Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Mogambo Guru right after this message. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us, and a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources. This information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, for more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package, and I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order direct, 417-273-4967. Or, if you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine and then send an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. I'm looking at the Kitco Mogambo Guru Report. It's a newsletter published weekly by a fellow named Richard Doughty. That's D-A-U-G-H-T-Y. It's an 8-page newsletter, comes out once a week, 52 issues a year, and it's free. And the guy's pretty good. He's not at the top of my list, but he's not down at the bottom either. Here at the law school, we probably receive 15 or 20 of these newsletters, economic newsletters. We typically call these the underground press. And we all know what CNN and what the Nightly Business Report reports to us, or what we see on PBS or NBC and CBS. That's the above ground, that's the stock reports, that's the normal, natural, everyday garden variety report that we receive on the economy. And they tell us that the economy is good and getting stronger and it's getting better. But they never tell you about the national debt, the interest on the national debt, Social Security. They never give you the numbers and figures as to when Social Security will become insolvent, or what the stock and bond markets are actually doing and what investors are doing. They don't tell us the bad news. They only tell us the good news. The worst thing that you're going to hear from Dan Rather is that unemployment is up or unemployment is down, one or the other. But he isn't going to tell you about the economic consequences of the balance of trade deficit at 600 and $50 billion a year, and that all the money that's available in the world to borrow is $800 billion a year, and between the balance of payments deficit and the federal budget deficit, it's over $1 trillion a year. There's not that much money out there. So the only solution when there isn't enough money to borrow is to print it. You just print it. And that's what the government's doing. They've raised the monetary supply from about $5 trillion in 1987 up to $9.5 trillion today, and they're shooting for $13.5 trillion by the end of this year. I don't think they're going to make their goal, but they're out there printing and they're out there trying. And this fellow, Dottie, called the Mogambo Guru, he's kind of a humorous writer. He writes a fairly humorous newsletter. I think you'll enjoy it. You can't go wrong. It's free of charge. All you have to do is go to Kitco and download it. This is the January 26th, 2005 newsletter. There was a couple of points in here that I wanted to make, and I wanted to introduce you to this underground newsletter, which deals primarily in inflation. This is probably the number one or the best inflation newsletter that's out there. Well, that's out there that I know of. If somebody else is writing one, I could, if I knew about it, probably recommend it. But this guy here, not only is humorous, he's kind of a one-track guy. He hits inflation every week, and he'll tell you what the inflation numbers are and where it's going and how it gets there. And that's why you hear me from time to time tell you that the official rate of inflation is 3.5%, but the real rate of inflation is 6 or 7. And sometimes people say, well, where do you get these numbers? If the official rate's 3.5, why do you tell us that it's 6 or 5.5? And the answer is because the government lies a lot. They don't lie all the time. They just lie a lot of the time. They tell you the truth. They lie to you and keep you confused all of the time. But they don't lie to you all the time, and they don't tell you the truth all the time. And these numbers come from other sources, other newsletters. Many of these guys go to the Treasury, or they'll go to Wall Street, or they'll go to the insurance industry or insurance companies. And all of these are corporations, and all of these corporations publish their annual reports. If you want to know how the banking industry has been doing, you go to the banking reports and they'll tell you. And there's statistics and numbers out there. Nobody ever reads them. I mean, the average truck driver does not read these numbers and hasn't got a clue as to what they mean. There are economists that read them. They don't publish them. They don't propagandize on them because that's not their job. Their job is to sell stocks. And if they give you people bad news, if they told you the truth about where we really are in the economy, you wouldn't buy stocks. You wouldn't buy bonds. You'd go dig a hole and bury yourself in it and drop out of society. It would just scare the pants off of you. So the mainstream news media is a sales force for Wall Street and the political establishment. And their job is to make you feel good. So they tell you what's really going on. They'll tell you that unemployment is up or down 0.1% or 0.2% this month. And they make passing references to the budget deficit, but they don't dwell on it. They'll make a passing reference on inflation. They'll tell you, well, it's 3.5% and it's well under control, and that's really good for our economy, and it's good for the world economy. They'll tell you from time to time in the passing reference that the balance of payments deficit was $40 billion last month, but they'll give you a good side of it, and they'll say agricultural exports from the United States were up $1.5 billion for the year. America is now almost a net importer of food. Not quite. We still export more than we import. But that's coming to a halt here in a couple of 3 years. And we're going to be a net importer of food, just like we're a net importer of steel, and a net importer of shoes, and a net importer of televisions, and a net importer of automobiles, and so on. Things have changed here in the world, in the world's economy, and in our economy in the United States. The mainstream press has a job, and their job is to sell you on the economy, sell you on everything is good, everything is great. And if they didn't, and you people actually took actions, which any prudent person would do, if they knew that the Titanic had already hit an iceberg and there's a big hole in the side of the ship, we'd be scrambling for the lifeboats. My God, if we scramble for the lifeboats, the ship will surely sink. So we have to get you convinced that what we need to be doing here is bailing and working hard to keep the economy going. So if you're wondering why, if you wanted to know why I'm a right-wing reactionary conspiracy theory nutcase with a conservative bias three notches to the right of John Birch, it's because I read newsletters like the Magombo Guru. Now on page 3, I'm going to skip through, I'm not going to read every paragraph to you. I just want to introduce you to the concepts and point out something about inflation, about what's going on in our economy that aren't generally covered by people like the privateer or Franklin Sanders, per se. Let's take a look and zero in on inflation. He starts off here on page 3, says, so do you ever wonder what the Chinese are going to do with all of those dollars that they're accumulating? Did you ever wonder, or maybe they wake up in the morning and think to themselves, Hong Choi Hin Gong, which of course means, I wonder how much value those damn American dollars lost last night. Well, wonder no more. They have decided to buy things with those dollars before those dollars turn into just worthless bits of paper, which will probably be a lot sooner than anyone thinks. Now, if you don't believe me, and if you do believe me, then there's something very wrong with you, so you deserve whatever bad happens to you. Let's just see what some other fine folks have to say. And for the record, these are people who think as you do, namely that the Magombo is a loudmouth jerk, so at least you have something in common. For instance, over at the Christian Science Monitor, there's an article entitled China's Risky Scramble for Oil by David R. Francis that starts off noting that, quote, the average American consumes 25 barrels of oil a year. In China, the average Chinese consumes about 1 barrel per year. In India, it's less than 1 barrel per person per year. We Americans are gluttons. And I know that you think it looks bad to criticize us Americans as gluttons when I have just stuffed an entire donut dripping with a delicious icing into my mouth at once, and now my cheeks are puffed out, and I look like some kind of deranged squirrel, and when I talk I sound like mm-mm-pum-gum, and there's a reason for that. By eating the donuts as an integral audiovisual aid, and as such, as a necessary part of the class lecture, they are a tax deduction, and the fact that I originally borrowed the money to buy the donuts means that, net, 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 I'm making money by eating donuts. Man, why didn't I think of this earlier? This is the best plan I ever had. But sadly, my brilliant Magombo tax windfall bonanza, known as the BMTWB, that's brilliant Magombo tax windfall bonanza, is not going to have much of an impact on my lifestyle because I consume a lot fewer donuts than I do barrels of oil. And it is going to get worse, too, as Mr. Francis goes on to say. So as the 2.4 billion Chinese and the billion plus Indians move to improve their living standards, they are going to want more of the world's dwindling oil supply, likely more than can be produced. Now that perceived shortage is setting off an intensifying scramble to tie up oil reserves around the world. And so far, China has been the most aggressive player, but the competition is just now getting started. Now, how strong is this competition for the world's dwindling oil supplies? Well, I know that everybody in the whole world is out to get me personally, and so I assume that the self-same whole world would all like to take oil and donuts right out of my mouth. The greedy bastards. Not much help, I admit, but it gives you a certain perspective on things. So in desperation, we turn to Mr. Francis again. And he, in reply, writes, "The challenge is huge for China and India to reach just one quarter of the level of U.S. oil consumption. World output would have to rise by 44% to get to half of the U.S. level. World production would need to double." I love this kind of thing. So I grab you by the front of your shirt with my grubby little fist, and I haul you in close to my face so that I can look deep, deep, deep into your eyes, and I say, "World oil output is maxed out, and refining capacity is maxed out too. And so just where in the hell is all of this additional output going to come from?" And just as suddenly, I release you, and you collapse in a heap at my mighty Mogambo feet, and two thoughts instantly cross your mind. First, why did that stupid bastard grab me like that? And two, what in the hell is that smell? P.U. Ignoring you and your two impertinent questions, I say that if there is one thing that I am pretty sure of, and pretty sure is true, and it is that when demand exceeds supply, the only way to equilibrate the two forces is for the price of oil to go up. And although I have never actually shown a profit in my life, or even been near one as far as I can tell, mostly because I'm an incompetent loser whose entire inventory of managerial skills ranges from bad to non-existent, I have heard and I have read about profits, and as I understand it, you would make a profit if prices go up. Now, I just happen to have a copy of the Mogambo Unabridged Dictionary called the TMUD, the Mogambo Unabridged Dictionary, nearby. So it's child's play to look up competition. Competition. And there are, of course, many alternate definitions. But we are interested in the one definition categorized under competition, resource, international, long-term, price action, phases of. Page 4744. So we go to page 4744 and we read that in this case it is defined as a period of time when prices start heading up, leading to a time when prices are still heading up, which leads to a time period where prices have seemingly always headed up, culminating in a period when prices continued to go up, but that suddenly stop going up, and over the long term, even at relatively low levels of inflation, prices will rise enough to make your freaking eyes pop out of your freaking head. And as a result, the growing demand for oil is leading to a growing global conflict, warns Amos Nur, who is a geophysicist at Stanford University. And if you don't think so, then ask the people of Iraq if they have noticed any conflict with foreigners recently. But it is not only oil, boys and girls, oh no. As Jim Willey reports, that the Chinese are making bids too for starters. The Chinese, for starters, are making bids to acquire Noranda Copper, gobble up vast tracts of undeveloped land in Alberta's energy fields, buy up Australia and Brazil to secure large supplies of minerals, and buy the American energy firm Unocal. And Mr. Willey says, the captured booty will be mineral and energy properties, which will elevate the tone of the commodity bull market and eventually trigger a bidding war on mining and energy stocks in the coming year. Political fallout is certain, and tensions will heighten. But it isn't just the Chinese either. Man, it just keeps getting worse and worse. He goes on, like driving a stake into my heart, to report about how a newly coalesced group was formed. Greater Asia has banded together to form the Shanghai Cooperative Group in order to create what could become a more powerful commodity supply organization than OPEC itself. China, India, Russia, and the former Soviet Muslim republics form the nucleus. So what does all of this mean? Well, I have my own ideas, most of which revolve around me eating an entire pepperoni and sausage pizza. But perhaps Mr. Willie can come up with something better. And sure enough, he does. Now, my conclusion, Willie says, calls for an amplification of current trends in a declining U.S. dollar and rising commodity prices, with the added risk of the United States locked out of these markets. You mean that China and India and Russia and the former Soviet Muslim republics that he talks about might want to hurt us? Why? Didn't we spend most of the last century kicking all their nasty little butts and humiliating them for 100 years? Wasn't that enough already? They want another little taste of American competition, do they? Well, you know, this is very alarming to me, and mostly because I am the easy and easily excitable type, but also because we Americans are living way, way, way beyond our means, and we've been living that way for a very long, long, long time. And that means that our standards of living are going to have to come down. And they are coming down. And when the prices that we pay for things go up faster than our incomes with which we pay for those things, our standard of living is going to fall. So welcome to the future, chumps. There isn't a damn thing anybody can do about it, because believe me when I tell you that every dirtbag government that ever lived and every economist that's ever lived have all sought the holy grail of somehow magically managing things to produce a utopian prosperity without earning and getting rich by amassing unpayable debts. And I blush to admit that even I, the great Mogambo, have spent a great deal of my time also searching for a way to turn my natural stupidity, my natural ignorance, and sloth into a prosperous career so that I too could make lots and lots of easy money. And then I could go back to a high school reunion and prove to them that they were all wrong to have used my locker as a urinal for all those angst-filled teenage years. Well, so far, and wait a moment as I tally up the final score, we have all failed miserably in our quests for a free lunch on Easy Street. I call that FLOES, free lunch on Easy Street. Not one of us even came close. The lesson seems to be, and you might want to write this down since it's a concept that is apparently difficult to grasp given how little attention is given to it, that a country and everyone in it cannot continually borrow and spend their way to prosperity. There must be a law. And no matter how much we want to, or how cool that would be, or how many congressional buttheads say that you can do it, but you can borrow and spend yourself into bankruptcy and ruination, and you will, too, if you ever try that stupidity. And if you want to know why I'm cowering under the coffee table, clutching a submachine gun to my chest and whimpering, it's because America will be bankrupt and ruined because we have been trying that silly crap for the last 40 years. And the other lesson is that even trying that silly crap always results in heartbreak, which is how I will feel when I see you pounding on my door, the door of the Mogambo Fortress and Fortified Bunker Complex, also known as the MFAFBC. It's the Mogambo Fortress and Fortified Bunker Complex, begging me to give you something, anything, for your lousy handful of worthless paper U.S. dollars. And as I squeeze off a few bursts of machine gun fire to chase you away, I will think to myself, the mighty heart of the Mogambo. T-M-H-O-T-M. The mighty heart of the Mogambo is breaking for their plight. But then again, how about me? Who's going to replace all of this very expensive ammunition that I'm firing here? Me, that's who. Insert video footage of money sprouting wings and flying away so that you can get the picture. And yet, how many of them care about my problem here? None of them. None. The selfish bastards take that. And the soundtrack erupts in a cacophony of gunfire, and the scene fades to black. Well, the end result of inflation is always heartbreaking like that, and that is why all intelligent people have strenuously tried to avoid inflation until the pseudocidal idiocy known as the Greenspan Fed took over in 1987. Lawrence Lindsay, former Fed governor, says that he figures that long-term rates are being held down by a global glut of savings. No kidding. It's due to a glut of something, all right, as all that money plus the deluge of money pouring out of the world central banks has to go somewhere. Gary Stern, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, says that he believes the Fed can keep hiking rates at a measured pace because he does not foresee deterioration in inflation prospects. Now, I enclosed the word deterioration in quotes because I think I cut and pasted that from somewhere, but I forgot where. And if you think that the Mogambo is going to take the time to actually do a little research to clear up the mystery, then you're a bigger idiot than he is. And that is really saying something. But I like that part. I like that part that goes, does not foresee deterioration in inflation prospects. Now, that must be an example of Fed newspeak. Is he saying that inflation pressures aren't tame enough to stop hiking rates? Meaning that there is inflation, but they're low enough for the Fed to keep raising rates slowly up from insanely low to only stupidly low? The damn Fed has watched as all that money that they created, ton upon ton of it, year after year, went into raw, grubby consumption financed by going into unbelievable debt and buying overpriced government debt and buying overpriced stocks and overpriced bonds and overpriced houses and overpriced anything you can name, which is close to what Warren Buffett said the other day. And if you want to buck both the Mogambo and Warren Buffett, which I call the new dynamic duo, then go ahead, chump. Now, taking a look at what other Federal Reserve morons have to say, we should express our thanks to Peter Spina and GoldSeek.com for posting Factbox US, Fed policymakers' recent comments, which is a real hoot, if you like that kind of thing. But if you go to the site and read the whole thing, you'll be struck by the sudden realization that these Federal Reserve people are all robots, although none of them can shoot laser beams out of their eyes, so they're just cheap robots at that. Well, don't believe me. Well, Reuters quotes Fed Governor Ben Bernanke saying on January the 19th, quote, inflation is likely to remain under control. The camera switches to the Mogambo, who is grinding his teeth together in rage. 3.5% inflation, even using the laughably low official figure of inflation, is anything but under control. And he goes on to say, quote, I don't think it's the job of the monetary policy to address investor behavior, unquote. again, the camera switches to the Mugambo, whose face is a study in surprise, also known as SIS, a study in surprise, as he asks, "Does this bozo think that pumping liquidity by the gallon into the economy and thus driving interest rates into the basement is not going to influence investor behavior? Cheap money is not going to influence investor behavior? Especially those investors who are more rightfully speculators, out to make a quick buck, and who then beat it out of town before somebody from a law enforcement agency comes around and starts asking a lot of embarrassing questions. And pretty soon, all of the neighbors are spilling their guts to the police and the newspapers and the television reporters about how none of them ever thought that I seemed normal in the first damn place, and how none of them is surprised in the least. And they always had a feeling that something like this was someday going to happen. Then they quote Fed Governor Susan Bies, who said on January the 18th, quote, "I believe that with underlying inflation expected to moderate, the Federal Reserve can continue to remove its policy accommodation at a measured pace, consistent with its commitment to maintain price stability as a necessary condition for maximum sustainable economic growth," unquote. I can hardly sit in my chair, straining at the harness that I am ordered to wear as a part of my plea bargain. I am screaming. First, she says that there is inflation, but that she expects it to moderate, while at the very same freaking time, she's calling this inflation price stability. God, I hate her. I hate her. Then, without ever having actually been in business, or even in the private sector, she thinks she knows all about what it is like out there in the real world. And she says, quote, "In my view, even with a rise in interest rates and some moderation in profit growth, the business sector should remain financially strong and continue to expand." God, I think I swallowed my tongue in my hostility. Now let me get this straight. Things are not so hot right now, but business is going to remain financially strong and continue to expand. And in the future, they tell us, while we're making less profit, businesses will completely ignore rising interest rates. Are you sure? I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm a know-it-all, but it seems that I read somewhere that disappearing profits and rising interest rates are always bad for the stock and bond markets and the economy. And in fact, rising interest rates to choke off economic activity is how the Federal Reserve cools down the economy, isn't it? Well, of course, things would not be complete without Minneapolis Fed President Gary Stern. Here's what he said. He said also on January the 18th, quote, "I personally don't have the sense that there is excessive risk-taking in U.S. financial markets," unquote. That's why we pay this guy the big money, I suppose. He doesn't need any facts. He has his definition of excessive, and that's all he needs. Most bonds are yielding less than the rate of inflation. The S&P 500 is selling at a price-earnings ratio of over 20. And at the end of a long, long boom, houses have mortgages as big as four times annual income. And yet there is no excessive risk-taking? My God, man, I'd love to hear what he does consider risk-taking. And he also reminds us that the wonderful people in the Federal Reserve are committed to maintaining low inflation, which is such a laughable, blatant lie that I am screaming at the top of my voice in my outrage. But I stop as soon as one of my attendants catches my eye, and he is signaling me that he is going to have to give me a shot if I don't shut up. So I sit down and I'm quiet now. Now, if the rush to save Social Security, in the rush to save Social Security, nobody asks why it needs saving. And the answer to why Social Security needs to be saved is that the buttheads in Congress, and especially the foul Democrats, but more and more the foul Republicans also, spent their considerable time year after year after year passing new regulations and new laws. They gave more and more whining people more and more money out of the fund. Suddenly, with so many people drawing money, there is a growing shortfall. Even with the continual hikes in the FICA taxes levied on all incomes. And the worst part isn't the money. The worst part is that it distorted the economy as a whole. And now we have lots and lots of people whose job it is to dispense and administer this money and account for the money and lobby for more money. And let's not forget the legions of people who get the money, who spend it on consumption. You can't stop, because then these people would have no money, which was their big problem and their big complaint in the first place. Now, you can bet your sweet ass that when they increase the Social Security tax, and they will, and the Medicare surtax, and you can be sure they'll increase that too, that the butthead commie Congress bastards will immediately start handing out all of that new money too, causing the next Social Security crisis when all of this new spending catches up with the increase in tax revenue, which will then force Congress to increase the taxes again, which will give them the wherewithal to increase benefits again, and then enroll a whole new bunch of people in the list of recipients again and again, and on and on and on, around and around, and it never stops. Now, at the MindWeb.com site, a guy named Elliot Guy, who is the editor of Wall Street's Winners and associate editor of Personal Finance, says that the periods where we tend to see financial instability and the weakening U.S. dollar is when gold performs the very best. In particular, he points to the rising U.S. consumer debt load, which he says is the number one cause for concern in the U.S. economy. And there is a statistic that I haven't seen much of, but he said the average consumer is spending 13.5% of disposable income simply to service debt. 13.5% of disposable income is paid in interest. 1/7 of all of the after-tax income goes to debt service. And all of that is merely interest, which would be written, of course, as yow, yow, yow. And this is at a time when interest rates are currently the lowest rates, in literally four freaking decades. Mr. Guy, in his bid for biggest understatement of the year, says, "We are in the midst of a credit bubble." Hey, I'm getting carried away. I'm almost through. But I'm going to take a break here. I've got about 20 minutes left. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. Well, some of them I read from the paper that I'm reading from. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this radio station. For more information about The Law Hour, an editorial review, just go to my website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. We're reading from the Magambo Guru. I want to recommend it one more time. I just have a couple, three more paragraphs here to finish it up. This newsletter now is free. Not very many newsletters are free. They typically cost you $100, $200 a year. Some of them a little more. Some of them get a little pricey. I've seen some up to $600. You ought to subscribe to two or three newsletters. And Kitco. Kitco, that's a company that sells gold and silver. They put out a number of these newsletters. The Magambo Guru is put out by Richard Doughty, D-A-U-G-H-T-Y. He's located at www.dailyreckoning.com. That's www.dailyreckoning.com. Or you can go to www.kitco.com. www.kitco.com. This newsletter is primarily aimed at inflation. And every week, I guess it's 52 issues a year or close to it, he'll be talking about inflation. Other newsletters zero in on other things. The Money Changer zeroes in on hard money. All of these are hard money conservative newsletters. We call them the underground press. These are the people who keep their fingers on the pulse of money, banking, and the economy, and the chicanery that goes on under the guise now of economics. You remember the Enron fiasco? WorldCom and Global Crossing and all these big corporations that went upside down. Well, if you'd have been in touch with these underground newsletters, you wouldn't have had any stock in any of those companies, because stocks don't have any profits in them. And they haven't for years. And the people that buy those stocks are not there to make money off of the stocks. They're there to make money off of you, who send them your money to buy those stocks, because you believe that these fund investors know what they're doing and what they're talking about. So you have stocks that not only are underperforming, and get this, on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, there's only four stocks on the average that pay 5% a year. 5%. Two of those weren't paying any dividends the last time I checked. You can get the Dow Jones Industrials just by going on the web. Just punch in Dow Jones. There's 30 companies. And they'll give you all of the pertinent financial information. You won't understand everything that you get in the report, but you'll understand enough of it that if you just take your little Texas Instruments calculator and do a little arithmetic, you'll say, this is insane. Who in his right mind would invest $10,000 in a company that pays no dividends? You know what that means? That means that when you pay $10,000 for these stocks in Walmart, which pays no dividends, you're expecting the value of that stock to go up so that you can sell it at a profit. That's the same thing as gambling. That's the same thing that you do on the crap table. That's where you put $10,000 on the pass line and you throw the dice and hope that a 7 or 11 comes up. You're in hopes. Now, in the old days, we used to buy stocks because they paid interest. They paid dividends. Today, the amount of dividends that they pay compared to the amount of money that the stock costs, leaving aside, of course, the possibility that the stock can go down in value as well as it can go up, doesn't pay enough dividends to keep up with inflation, which over the average, 1960 to 2000, was 4.7%. With some peak periods as high as 21%, and some low periods as low as 1%. But on average, you're losing value at the rate of about 5% a year. Now, those are the official government statistics, and that's what Doughty, the Magambo Guru, is reporting. And these numbers come from official government agencies like the OMB office, or the Treasury Department, or the Labor Department, and Commerce Department, and Securities and Exchange Commission, and so on. And all of these agencies publish this information. It's out there. And what you need is a newsletter that will put these facts and figures together. Some guy like this fellow Doughty here, who will put these facts and figures together, give you a report, tell you where the bear does it, so that you can make an intelligent decision. I mean, I'm not telling you not to buy stocks. I don't care what people buy. That's a decision for you in the marketplace to make. But before you buy those stocks, don't you think that you ought to have full disclosure? You know, one of the complaints that's been going on is that people are relying upon these Wall Street yuppies who call them on the telephone and say, you should buy this stock, it's really good. So you buy the stock. And sure enough, the stock goes down in value. The company goes bankrupt or whatever. You know, the week before Enron went upside down, they were selling Enron stock, weren't they? And somebody must have been saying, hey, this stock is really a good buy. You should buy it. And every time you buy that stock, it's like the old maid in a card game. You pass the old maid on. And you hope that it went up in value so that you make a profit and somebody else ends up with the old maid. Because at some point in time, it's going to collapse. And when it does, that guy gets caught with the old maid and he loses. Now, I don't buy stocks and I don't deal in stocks. That's not to say that you shouldn't or you should. But all of these people have one thing in common. They're all bullish on gold and silver, and they're all advocates of hard money, which is exactly what God told us back in the days of Moses. He said, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, and thou shalt not steal. And we didn't pay attention, and we didn't listen. We've been following the Pied Pipers. We've been following the elders of Israel. We've been following our princes, as they're described in the Bible, following our princes. Now, in a related note for all of us gold bugs out here, he also thinks that the ratio between gold and the Dow Jones Industrial Average will change from its current 25 ounces of gold to approximately 2 to 5 ounces of gold. That's also known as a loss. So the big question of the day, and Mogambo calls it the BQODTD, it's the big question of the day, is will the Dow Jones Industrial Average go down, or will the price of gold go up? Probably both. Safehaven.com posted an interesting essay by James Jane entitled Markets and Data Suggest that the U.S. economy or economic recovery is artificial. And they write, quote, we show that the behavior of the stock market suggests that the current recovery to be the worst in 134 years. Maybe it is the worst recovery on record. Also keeping in mind that the past 4 years have seen one of the largest stimuli from federal government expenditures, along with the Federal Reserve combined, and yet we have the worst employment growth since 1932, and absolutely no income growth whatsoever. Now, this is bad enough. But then they go on to write, and notice that they are using all capital letters here, which is either some desperate, pathetic cry for attention or a literacy device to indicate importance or emphasis. They said, quote, 2001 to 2004 is the first time in history for which we have data during which jobs were lost despite one of the largest stimuli in history. I'm going to read that to you a second time. Now, the Mogambo Guru newsletter cites from other newsletters. That's what he's doing here. That's why he cited safehaven.com. And throughout this newsletter, it's 8 pages long, he cited probably 6 or 8 of those. See, there's other people out there that have views on what's going on or an expertise on what's going on. This one he's citing on employment. Now listen to this employment number again. You didn't get this from Dan Rather. From the period 2001 through 2004 is the first time in the history of the country for which we have data during which jobs were lost despite one of the largest stimuli in history. Now here's our government going in debt, hundreds of billions of dollars a year, stimulating the economy through the Federal Reserve and budget deficits to the tune of more than $1 trillion. President Bush needed a debt increase of nearly $1 trillion and went back and got a second one, nearly $1 trillion, in 2004. Twice now, the president has gone back for debt increases. Let me get a little water in here. It's choking me up, all this debt. So the Mugambo comes along and he says, now, were you aware of that? Are you really sure that you want to go into the stock market and invest your money in stocks? Are you really sure you want to buy that piece of real estate? Or would you maybe be better off if you could preserve the value of your purchasing power, which, by the way, you're losing at the rate of about 5% a year. The official rate is 3.5. The unofficial rate is in excess of 6. I just rounded off to 5%. That's why I've said to you in the past, if you're making less than 10% return on any investment, you're wasting your time. You have to make 5% to stand still. That just covers inflation. So if you're going to make any money off of your money, off of your investments, you have to make 10%. And 5% is the bare minimum. I mean, anybody that's making less than 5% is wasting his time. Most people don't know how to invest their money, so they go to the paid professionals and they give their money to some investment fund. The investment fund makes money off of investing your money. When it goes up in smoke like Enron, they don't care. They made their money. So tuck that one away in your heart. Safehaven.com. Told you that you've got the largest stimuli in the history of the country. At the very same time, you're losing jobs at the same time. More than 2 million jobs have been exported overseas. They took 2 million jobs that you did have and exported them to India, for crying out loud. Call that outsourcing. That's going to continue. After all, we want free trade. Now, why in the world Americans want free trade? It's beyond me. You know, I'm just a lowly plumber. I'm just an ignorant farmer. And I certainly don't want to get in the way of all of you real intelligent people out there that have PhDs after your name. But if you'll take a look at America's position in the world in 1950, America was the number one producer in the world 55 years ago. Number one producer of the 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production. We were number one in automaking, number one in steel production, number one in aluminum making, number one in aircraft manufacture, and so on. Today, 55 years later, and it didn't even take 55 years. It only took 40 years or 30 years, but today, 50 years later, we're not number one in any of those 15 leading economic indicators. Even the Airbus people in Europe produce more commercial airliners than we Americans do. That's right. That was the last domino to fall. We've now been overtaken in aircraft production, commercial aircraft production. Now, something pretty big is in the wind, and it ought to send a signal to all of us over here. The Chinese are out here buying up with those surplus dollars they've got that they know are going to be worth less than confetti paper. They're out here busily buying up everything in sight. They're going to buy up Union Oil Company of California, Unico. They're up in Alberta, Canada, buying up oil properties. We've just about reached peak oil, so we're in the process. That is, the Chinese are in the process, and I guess we're competitors with them. We took over Iraq. That's 25% of the world's oil. We just went in there with a military occupation and took it. And we're not leaving. And the government that we install in Iraq will be a puppet regime. It will be a democratic puppet regime. And that's just where reality's at. And of course, the Europeans are sitting over there on the sidelines, and the Russians are sitting over there watching. And the world is, and China is sitting there watching. And remember, the biggest war, the biggest battle in the history of mankind is predicted to take place 35 miles northwest of Jerusalem at Megiddo, the Valley of Megiddo, Armageddon. Armageddon, you ever heard that term? And we're at that period in history when the Chinese. And this battle is going to consume 200 million soldiers. Boys and girls, there's only two countries in the world that could field a 200 million man army. China and or India, or a combination thereof. The Chinese are now becoming an industrial colossus. And they need oil. And it wouldn't be a stretch of the imagination to figure that the battle over Middle Eastern oil is going to be centered in Israel or Palestine. Well, so says Bible prophecy. So pay attention to what's going on. The Mugambo Guru is a good way to do that. And it doesn't cost anything. I mean, you just download it right off of the web. And he's a pretty funny guy. He uses some bad words. Well, I guess they're bad words to some people's thinking, but he's just a plain talker, just like a plumber. Michael Boskin, the little twit, who was with his infamous Boskin Commission, instrumental in setting up the blatant fraud known as hedonic adjustments, whereby the actual horrors of inflation are handily removed using only the magic of making mathematical adjustments to actual prices to account for the benefits of quality and convenience, is back on the scene with an essay in Monday's Wall Street Journal entitled "The Economist's President." To save you a lot of time, he starts out by indicating that he is still not in touch with reality as decent people know it, and that he will still say and do anything because he is such a shameless whore. And he starts off with the incredible sentence, "President Bush deserves very high marks on economic policy in his first term." I laugh in contempt. Compared to what? He borrowed more money than any other president, both nominally and percentage-wise. He's presiding over the largest budget deficits in history. We've got the largest trade deficits in history. Foreigners own about a third of all of our marketable debt and assets. He got us into an expensive, deadly quagmire of a war. He pressed for the most expensive and hugely grandiose expansion of Medicare in history. And the Boskin character thinks Bush deserves high marks for that. Have we lost our sanity? All right, kitco.com, that's one, kitco.com, or thedailyreckoning.com. All right, I'm about out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package to order yours. Call the Law School at 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Hey, there's the signal. It says time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.